This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is where government actions meet business decisions, online at www.bgov.com. That's BGov, by the way. We're on air Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30 right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Healthcare, pretty big election year topic this time around. Obamacare versus the Romney proposal. I'm doing the air quotes. Whether you agree or disagree with the direction the president has taken health care, at least we know what he's doing. We need to understand what Mitt Romney is doing, or let's say proposing, in order to make that informed decision. So to lend assistance, we've got BGov healthcare and policy analyst Chris Flavelle here to give us an item-by-item comparison of the two. He'll join us a little bit later in the program. And hey, guess what? Bloomberg Government has a TV show. That's right. I'll have all the details on our new TV show called Capital Gains. Capital Gains, new Bloomberg Government TV show. I'll tell you all about it in just a little while. We're going to kick off the program with the elephant in the room at Defense Secretary Leon Panetta's house. And as time goes on, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. He calls it the mindless meat axe. We call it defense sequestration. Now, I know we've beaten these cuts to a pulp here on Capital Impact, but we've got a new way to look at them. One way that no one has really examined until now. So joining me to shed some light on this pretty awful topic, if I do say so myself, the impact of sequestration on non-defense discretionary spending, the authors of the study, defense analyst Rob Levinson and budget analyst Cameron Luthy. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Great to be here, Alan.
So why don't we take a step back? I know we've gone over this a million times, but I want to set the stage. Give me, Rob, if you would, just a sequestration by the numbers, so to speak. What kind of numbers are we talking about as we look at it holistically?
Right. So as a result of last year's Budget Control Act, which was the deal that was cut between the Congress and President to allow the President to raise the debt ceiling, they had to come up with $1.2 trillion in cuts over about a 10-year period. Now, first, there was the super committee that was going to try and do this. The super committee failed. So now they have to – basically, these cuts will go into effect. It's $1.2 trillion, basically about $110 billion or so every year. And that's split between defense, which is about $55 billion, and non-defense, also about $55 billion. On the non-defense side, it's split between the non-defense discretionary spending and a little bit on the mandatory side, things like Medicare.
Okay, so we've got the stage set. Your latest study, Impact of Sequestration on Non-Defense Discretionary Spending, takes a look at that civilian world, so to speak. Non-defense spending in the civilian world, what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, again, the overall number on the non-defense side is about $38.5 billion, and that's everything from Health and Human Services to the Department of Veterans Affairs. Well, actually, Veterans Affairs is not cut a whole lot.
Right.
But all the other civilian departments and all the services that they perform.
How will the cuts be implemented? Either one of you. Cameron.
Well, under the Budget Control Act, on January 2nd, if Congress and the President can't agree to change the law, OMB will issue a report, basically, and they'll start cutting, in the case of the non-defense discretionary budget accounts, about 9.1% across the board. And that implementation is scheduled to occur in January.
So we're talking across the board cuts. It's not going to be a level playing field within each agency, however, if I'm understand correctly, it's at their discretion.
Well, here's the thing. If you're Labor HHS, if you're the Department of Labor, if you're HHS, if you're education, you're going to get cut the same percentage. The question that hasn't been answered yet, the discretion question, is will you have discretion to pick winners and losers? Will you be able to say at HHS, we're going to protect the National Institutes of Health, but we're going to cut departmental administration?
Right.
Or within a budget account, which programs can you cut? Which programs would you protect? And obviously, if you protect some, you got to cut the rest
more. Others, right. Right.
And that question hasn't been answered yet. So, we don't know whether they'll have that degree of latitude.
We're kind of in a holding pattern at this point. The president has held off on announcing what is truly going to happen. And I want to touch on something that that Rob brought up just a second ago, and it has to do with the VA. First off, do we know when the president or what is going to happen when the president drops this bomb?
Well, there's a law that was passed by Congress with almost unanimous support in both houses called the Sequestration Transparency Act. Mm-hmm. And he was required basically by last Friday to deliver a report describing in more detail how these cuts would be made. Now, the White House has said they're still working on the report and they would deliver it later this week sometime, but we still don't know exactly when that's going to be delivered. And that may spell out in a little more detail and resolve some of those issues that Cameron mentioned mm-hmm. as to what the White House is thinking in terms of how they will make these cuts.
Rob, you mentioned something about the VA, and you said a portion of it is going to be set aside or taken care of. I shouldn't say set aside because that's, that's common knowledge. But a portion of the money will not be touched. We're talking salaries of military personnel. What about health care? I had heard rumblings that that's potentially on the chopping block.
Okay. If you're talking about the Department of Defense,
thank you very much.
In the Department of Defense, the president has the power under the law to exempt what are called the personnel accounts. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the accounts that directly pay for the salaries and other forms of direct compensation to uniformed military personnel. And in the president's 2013 budget, that's about $135 billion. There's another $14 billion of personnel money in the overseas contingency operations, which pay for the war in Afghanistan. So that's sort of taken off the table. But the interesting thing is that there are goods and services that service those personnel that are part of the operations and maintenance account. Mm-hmm. And healthcare is one that you mentioned. Basically, the way we calculated, about $3 billion will be taken out of DOD healthcare if the cuts are applied sort of uniformly across the board. Now, the DOD will still have to take care of the same number of people because sure. they're not cutting any personnel, but they're cutting the $3 billion out of the healthcare budget. And this will create difficulties for DOD. They've said that there's no good way to do this. That was the way one senior DOD official described having to deal with $3 billion, which may mean they may go back to Congress later in the year and ask to reprogram, that is, move money from some other account back into the healthcare account, which means, again, that you're cutting deeper from wherever you move that money from.
Let's say that move doesn't happen and healthcare is actually sacrificed. I know we're speaking hypothetically at this point. The healthcare industry is the one who's going to suffer along with the military personnel at that point. Would that make sense?
Well, right. I mean, healthcare for the military personnel is delivered through a program called TRICARE, and there's three huge contracts mm-hmm. that divide up the United States to deliver it. Humana and some of these other major health insurers are part of those. So certainly, I mean, if they can't find the $3 billion, then they just have to cut back on services, and sure. somehow they're going to have to curtail. They probably won't go after the active duty, but maybe retirees, they'll slow things down, they'll cut services, they may close facilities and things like that, but there definitely will be an impact.
Let's talk about some of the companies that may be in dire need of money come 2013 as that money starts to disappear, the contracts go away, the money is sequestered, so to speak. Who are some of the big people that may end up having to refinance homes, let's say, in order to make life happen?
Look at it this way, right? If you look at federal agency, and you compare federal agencies, some of them spend more of their money on federal workers. Mm-hmm. Some spend more of their money on contracting for goods and services. So there's a big difference between, say, NASA on the one hand, which contracts out a huge percentage of their annual budget, versus, say, HHS, which has a lot of staff. And so the impact on contractors varies from agency to agency. Interestingly, in our study, we discovered that some of the same contractors who do a lot of business with the Department of Defense also do business with civilian agencies, Lockheed Martin being one of them.
Okay.
And there are other big contractors, Northrop Grumman, SAIC, that do work on both the defense and the non-defense side. So obviously, we looked at 2011 contract data because that's the last year for which we have a full year. Mm-hmm. But those same players are usually there year after year. So those are the kinds of companies that could have something at stake.
Would it be safe to say that the overseas market could benefit from this, or are they in the same straits that we're in at this point?
Well, if you look at Europe, right?
Right.
Their economy is in a big mess. So if take a defense contractor like Lockheed Martin, they're not necessarily going to find a lot more buyers in Europe than they are here.
They are some of the big defense countries. They are certainly looking overseas.
Right.
But as Cameron said, they're not looking in Europe. There are some areas of growth like in India or the Middle East where there is some money. But none of them feel that you know, anything overseas can really compensate for what they stand to lose in the decline of the U.S. defense budget.
In the time that we have left, by the way, we're talking to Rob Levinson and Cameron Luthy about their latest study, Impact of Sequestration on Non-Defense Discretionary Spending. It's available now at bgov.com. Continuing resolution, right around the corner, benefits, no benefits. Will there be any crossover as we move into 2013?
Well, I think the number one takeaway is the continuing resolution doesn't make, as it's currently proposed and before the House, doesn't affect sequestration. It would just be the starting point from which cuts would be made.
Okay. All right. Subcontractors, final question. Wagging the dog at this point, along for the ride?
Well, subcontractors in a little bit away, you're right, they're along for the ride. In other words, they are dependent on what their prime does. In other words, if they provide, you know, Lockheed Martin's a major prime contractor. It's making the F-35 fighter jet. So if I'm the company that makes wheels for the F-35, I got to find out what Lockheed Martin is going to do. So if their program gets cut, are they going to curtail the order? So I'm really in a sort of a reactionary mode to what my prime contract customer is doing, because my customer isn't the government. My customer is the prime contractor. So yeah, the subcontractors have to sort of wait and see what the big boys do.
The clock is definitely ticking. Sequestration is just weeks away, let's say. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Alan.
Will you come back and keep us up to date?
Absolutely.
Cool. Impact of Sequestration on Non-Defense Discretionary Spending, available now. Hey, did you know that Bloomberg Government has developed a political talk show? Trust me, it's not your typical political talk show. Capital Gains will showcase Bloomberg Government's expert analysis, digging into the business impact of the latest developments across the federal government, hearing directly from the Washington leaders making those decisions, all hosted by veteran correspondent Peter Cook, who brings with him years of experience in Washington, D.C., reporting on the issues that matter with the people that matter. It's going to be on every Sunday, right after Face the Nation, on WUSA-TV9. If your business is Washington, you've got something to gain on Sunday mornings. The Power Block has a new show that means business in D.C., Bloomberg Government's Capital Gains, coming Sunday, September 16th, on WUSA-TV9 at 11:30 a.m. So that's not to be confused with Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact show that you're actually listening to right now on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And there's a lot that could be said about a potential Mitt Romney presidency, but there's one thing that's still up in the air. What in the world is a Mitt Romney White House going to do with healthcare? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Chris Flavelle is a healthcare and policy analyst with Bloomberg Government. He joins me now to hopefully answer that question. Hey, Chris.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Thank you for being here. And he would typically be in the office, but he's at Bloomberg North, eh? In Toronto. So thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to join us. So I got to commend you on your fantastic study. It's called Romney Healthcare Proposals, Item by Item Comparison to Obama. You had to go through some serious hoops just to get this information. Romney, as everybody knows, Mitt Romney has not really said word one about what his true healthcare plan is. He's pretty tight-lipped about this. But tell me about the hoops you had to jump through just to get this information.
Yeah, so there's been sort of an idea in this campaign that most people seem to have accepted, that beyond saying he would repeal the health care law that Obama signed in 2010, Mitt Romney hasn't really clarified what he would do on health care as president. So I thought, well, let's actually take a closer look at what he has said. And if you go to Mitt Romney's website, there's a list of 15 specific proposals that aren't all that revealing. A lot are unclear or lacking some details. So I called the campaign and I said, you know, I'd love to get an idea of what you mean by these. And after a bit of finagling, I got a background interview with one of their healthcare policy advisors. So we went through item by item and we had some follow-up after that. Then I took that to some outside experts who know some of this stuff. And the result was, I think, a pretty thorough rundown of just what he has said. And the result that I found is there's actually more there in terms of his specific proposals than he gets credit for. Some themes emerge, which I think are really interesting, and one is a really strong focus on the insurance industry. A lot of his measures are aimed at making insurance easier to get, especially high-deductible health plans. There seems to be this idea permeating the Romney campaign that if you can get people more price sensitive to the cost of their own coverage and their own care, that'll go some of the way to bringing down the cost growth in healthcare. Not something you hear about on the campaign trail, but a big part of his plan.
So I have a question about that, because just thinking as someone who has health insurance and knowing people who work in the medical community, that seems rather counterintuitive. If I am ill and I need to go see a doctor, I'm going to go see a doctor regardless of how expensive my health care coverage is. I understand that they're trying to make someone more conscious of the amount of money that health care truly costs, but is that a deterrent to actually using it?
It's a good question, and I think intuitively you could go either way on that. The hope, I believe, is that if people are more exposed to the cost of their care, they'll be more likely to only go see a doctor or have a procedure done if they feel it's really important.
Right.
Now, obviously, as you allude to, the question is the individual patient going to be well-equipped to make that decision, or will you have more people foregoing needed care as a result of high deductibles? It's a really interesting point. And again, I think perhaps that's one of the reasons why you haven't heard more about this thrust for Mitt Romney's proposals than we have.
You hear a lot about Medicare and people cutting Medicare for this, that, and the other reason, but there are actually people on Medicare who it's medically necessary for them to use it. They can't afford coverage, and that just kind of struck me all of a sudden. When you said that, I realized, wait a minute, there are people who literally can't afford to be on their own coverage, and that's why they are you taking advantage of a Medicare program. It's medically necessary for them, and to put a higher deductible in front of them, making them more conscious, may turn them away from actually using the benefits.
Yeah, and we should be clear that the high deductible, again, direction of Romney's proposals is really for the private insurance market.
Understood.
Now, for Medicare, a really interesting point, he said that he would repeal the Obama law, which has a number of measures designed to make Medicare more efficient and so less expensive over the long run. What I was struck by in the Romney proposals is if you dig through them, there isn't really a lot that would replace those efforts in the healthcare law to change the way Medicare works, to make it more cost efficient. So I think a big question for the Romney campaign has to be, if you agree that Medicare is growing too fast, which he does, how would you try to control that growth in the short term? He talks about vouchers starting in 10 years, but between now and then, I didn't see a lot or even almost anything that would try and bring down that cost curve sooner, which seems important.
Let's dive into some of these proposals that he has. According to MittRomney.com, and I quote, they want to return states to their proper place of regulating local insurance markets and caring for the poor. Section 1 of the study is called Restore State Leadership and Flexibility. That first proposal, block grant Medicaid and other payments to states. Explain that.
Yeah, this is not a new idea. Right now, Medicaid is a program run by the states, but they then get reimbursed for a portion of that cost by the federal government. Romney has said that instead of that current system, he would use federal block grants, where every year states get a fixed amount of money as their sort of Medicaid allotment from Washington, and in return for that new system, they can do kind of what they want. Romney hasn't said just how he would change federal restrictions, but the idea is in return for a fixed block grant that doesn't grow as fast as the current program, governors and state houses get more control over their program. Now, the question is, what does that do? We ran the numbers, and it looks like that'd be approximately a $1.26 trillion reduction in Medicaid financing from Washington from 2014 through 2022. You could argue that, sure, that's a big loss, but with more flexibility, states can find more efficient ways to run the program. I haven't heard a really good explanation of just how it would be possible to close that gap, even with the most efficient systems in the world.
Right.
So the question probably has to be, how realistic is that?
Yeah, so we're talking lots of obstacles to try to implement this thing. Who would be the winners if that were to be implemented?
If you look at the package of proposals as a whole, uh-huh, it looks like the insurance industry, and in particular plans that sell those high deductible options, would be the biggest winners. There isn't a lot in these proposals for healthcare providers. There's some talk of changing the way medical malpractice works to cap damage awards.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of evidence that would make a big difference. I think the big question has to be, again, if you're focused on the cost of healthcare system-wide for the economy. There doesn't seem to be a lot in this that would bring down that cost through efficiency. You'd have pressure on patients and consumers to spend less money, but I don't see how you'd get to more efficiency, and that's such a big part of the debate.
We're speaking with Chris Flavelle. He's a healthcare and policy analyst who's recently written a study called Romney's Healthcare Proposals, Item by Item Comparison to Obama. One that's a big topic here of late in the States anyway, in the States. I say it like we live someplace else. Electronic health records. I'm thinking of you in Canada. That's, that's where that came from. Electronic health records. What is the plan for the transition?
Really, really good question. So, Romney's proposals include one that reads, facilitate IT interoperability. And for those who don't live in this world, that means information technology and health data systems. Now, the catch is that when I spoke with Romney's advisor, he also said that there's not a lot of support from the Romney camp to continue current federal payments to healthcare providers that help them cover the cost of buying this data. So it's one thing to say that you want better interoperability, which means forcing vendors to provide systems that can talk to one another. Mm-hmm. But the question you have to ask again is, if doctors and hospitals aren't getting any financial help to buy these things, and if they're not getting penalties for not buying them, which is also part of the current law, how much uptake would you really see? Hard to project that. Interoperability can't hurt. But I think the broader question, again, is how much would that accelerate or decelerate the move towards using these electronic records, which everyone agrees is quite important.
Sure, sure. Being able to see that and getting the benefit as a patient to be able to view your own records through a secure portal, taking advantage of that is paramount, if you ask me. So Chris Flavelle is his name. He's a healthcare and policy analyst with Bloomberg Government. Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Total of 15. We obviously don't have time to review them all. Take a look at the study, Romney's Healthcare Proposals, Item by Item Comparison to Obama. It's available on BGov.com. Thanks to Cameron Luthy and Rob Levinson for joining the show as well. All their works can be found at BGov.com. Don't miss Capital Gains with Peter Cook on WUSA TV9, beginning this Sunday, September 16th at 11:30 a.m., right after Face the Nation. We'll get together again next Thursday, 11 a.m. Plenty more to say about the business implications of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.
Do government actions impact your business? When you need to know the impact of legislative, regulatory, and government spending actions on your business, turn to Bloomberg Government. Bloomberg Government is a web-based service with comprehensive government-related news, data, and analysis. From government spending and federal contract data to legislative and regulatory updates to empower you to make informed decisions. To learn more about Bloomberg Government and to register for a live demonstration, visit bgov.com, where government actions meet business decisions.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DoD contract.
Right. But did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.